This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Two White House officials said Sunday that the U.S. top trade negotiator will begin talks with the World Trade Organization on ways to overcome intellectual property issues that are keeping critically needed COVID-19 vaccines from being more widely distributed worldwide. The White House has been under pressure from lawmakers at home and governments abroad to join an effort to waive patent rules for the vaccines so that poorer countries can begin to produce their own generic versions of the shots to vaccinate their own populations. The U.S. has been criticized for focusing first on vaccinating Americans, particularly as its vaccine supply begins to outpace demand and doses approved for use elsewhere in the world, but not in the U.S., sit idle. The U.K. government says Britain is expediting its plans to increase aid for India's teetering healthcare system, promising more ventilators and expert advice as doctors grapple with the surge in coronavirus infections that's killing thousands of people each day. The initial intent is to send an additional 1,000 ventilators there. In addition, England's National Health Service, which has battled one of the worst COVID-19 outbreaks in Europe, is creating an advisory group to share its expertise with Indian authorities. As daily coronavirus case counts in India soar far beyond what other countries have reported, experts are cautioning the official COVID-19 numbers from the world's second most populous country are likely a massive undercount. Not enough testing, they say, is being done to give a true picture of the actual infections. This is VOA News. With Indian hospitals struggling to secure a steady supply of oxygen and more COVID-19 patients dying amid the shortages, a court in New Delhi says it would start punishing government officials for failing to deliver the life-saving items. On Sunday, India recorded a slight drop in new infections at more than 392,000 from a high of over 400,000 in the previous 24 hours. A person familiar with the discussion says that the United States and Iran continue active talks over the release of prisoners, although Washington has denied a report by Iranian state-run television that deals had been struck. Prisoner swaps between the U.S. and Iran are not uncommon, and both countries in recent years have routinely sought the release of detainees. But any movement between the two countries is particularly sensitive as the Biden administration looks to restart nuclear talks. The 2015 atomic accord between the nations included prisoner exchanges. The issue burst into public view with a report in Iran of a deal for the Islamic Republic to release U.S. and British prisoners in exchange for Tehran receiving billions of dollars. U.S. officials immediately denied the report, though a person with knowledge of the discussions who was not authorized to discuss them publicly said talks are active with messages passed between intermediaries. British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab has told Reuters that the group of seven richest countries will look at a proposal to build a rapid response mechanism to counter Russian propaganda and disinformation. Speaking ahead of a G7 foreign ministers meeting in London, the first such in-person meeting for 2 years, Raab said Russia's actions were a threat and that cyber attacks were something that allies across the world would come together to counter. Afghan government forces face an uncertain future and in a worst-case scenario, some bad possible outcomes against Taliban insurgents as the withdrawal of American and coalition troops accelerates in the coming week. That's according to the top U.S. military officer on Sunday. General Mark Milley described the Afghan military and police as reasonably well-equipped, reasonably well-trained, reasonably well-led. He cited Afghan troops' years of experience against a resilient insurgency, but he declined to say that they are fully ready to stand up to the Taliban without direct international backing during a potential Taliban offensive. More at VOAnews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Monday, May 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyans react to lifting of COVID-19 restrictions.
We'd like to thank the president for giving the five counties an opportunity to reopen their business. It has been tough, but as we said, our objective for this year is protection of lives.
Uganda reports new variants of the coronavirus from India. Malawi's president announces measures to improve workers' conditions. Somalia lawmakers and presidential term extension and the plight of journalists in East Africa on this World Press Freedom Day today, Monday.
I was taking videos of this incident, but as I was doing this, there came a group of four soldiers dressed in military uniforms and started beating me terribly. I tried to ask them, what wrong have I done to beat me like this?
And Angolan journalist Francisco Rasgado returns to court today for defamation. The story plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Uhuru Kenyatta over the weekend lifted COVID-19 restrictions imposed on March 26 this year. The announcement followed a decline in positivity cases, according to the government. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenyans in the affected areas are welcoming the announcement.
Speaking over the weekend at State House during the annual Labor Day celebrations held under strict COVID guidelines, President Uhuru Kenyatta said bars, restaurants, schools and churches will reopen under strict COVID guidelines. However, President Kenyatta said the ban on gatherings, including political assemblies, will remain extended till further notice.
It is directed that the cessation of movement into and out of the zoned areas be and is hereby lifted. The hours of curfew in the zoned area are revised to commence at 10 p.m. and end at 4 p.m. with effect from midnight. In-person and congregational worship shall resume in strict fidelity. However, the attending congregation is still capped to one-third of the capacity that all bars in the territory of the Republic of Kenya are to operate until 7 p.m. And restaurants are indeed encouraged to utilize outdoor spaces to maximize on physical and social distancing.
Many Kenyans, including those in the bar and restaurant industries, are welcoming the easing of restrictions. Boniface Gashoka is the Secretary General of the Kenya Bar and Restaurant Owners Association.
We'd like to thank the President, His Excellency President Uhuru Kenyatta, for giving the five counties an opportunity to reopen their business. Last year, we had a very tough year. And this year also, we've also closed our business. But as we said, our objective for this year is protection of lives. And that's why we've said that any directive that will come from the government, we will follow it to the letter.
The restriction on movement was a big blow to the transport sector, especially long-distance transport operators, including buses, trains, and domestic flights. Vincent Otieno, a supervisor at EasyCoach, one of the major long-distance bus companies in Kenya, says President Kenyatta's speech was very timely. He says his company was on the verge of laying off so many employees because it could no longer sustain them due to lack of income.
The president have really assisted the transport industry because all dependence was around 5 million people and people were really suffering. Even other staffs were being almost laid off. But once the president have opened for these five counties, it's a bring relief to other companies and also EasyCoach.
Joseph Ochieng, a fourth-year university student in Kenya, says he's glad his delayed graduation will now be a reality.
Last year was wasted. Everyone had to stay home because of the pandemic. But since the president has opened up the country and has allowed us back into class, we are happy because now we see light. We are now sure that at least we are going to cover something before the end of the year.
However, President Kenyatta has warned Kenyans against abusing the privileges, saying the measures will be escalated if COVID-19 cases rise again. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Uganda's Ministry of Health reports that it is recording new variants of the coronavirus. The variants detected by researchers include the COVID-19 variant from India, which prompted the country to suspend all flights from India. The Indian community in Uganda has welcomed the move of prioritizing public safety. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Effective May 1st at midnight, no flights from India shall be allowed into Uganda. The new directive follows the Ministry of Health researchers detecting one case of the coronavirus disease, an Indian variant, in the East African country. Dr. Jen Ruth Acheng, Uganda's Minister for Health, outlined the travel restrictions.
All passenger flights between Uganda and India are suspended until further notice. No travelers from India shall be allowed into Uganda, regardless of the route of travel.
Acheng also stressed that all travelers who may have been in India or traveled through India in the last 14 days or about 2 weeks, regardless of route taken, shall not be allowed into Uganda. She says Uganda has so far recorded 399 cases out of the five variants circulating in Uganda. Other variants identified include variants from Nigeria, the United Kingdom, and South Africa. The Ugandan variant that is now reported in 34 countries has registered 135 cases, 15 cases of the South African variant, 15 of the United Kingdom variants, 13 cases of the Nigerian variant, and one case of the Indian variant currently being treated at Uganda's Mulago National Referral Hospital. Mohan Rao is the head of the Indian Association in Uganda, a community-led organization. He says even though the cancellation of flights is going to affect trade and other engagements, the association welcomes the move. Rao says they have written to the Ministry of Health seeking permission to carry out a sensitization drive among the Indian community.
You see, some people will feel shy or agree I have corona. You know, you need to come out openly. Yes, I have this. I'm isolating myself. For me, what I wanted to sensitize, corona is not a big disease. It is only just stay around and take a timely treatment. You have to take it. Then you will come out with the painkillers.
He has been sending text messages to members of the community and also wants to have community meetings. These are allowed in Uganda as long as people wear masks and social distance with a limit of 200 people at a time. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Somalia's lower house of parliament has voted to end the two-year term extension for President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed after protests in the capital last week. Mohamed Kahia reports from Mogadishu.
All 140 members of Somalia's parliament present during the extraordinary session voted Saturday for the nullification of two-year term extension for President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, popularly known as Farmajo. During an address, President Farmajo thanked the House and said the Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble will spearhead the delayed electoral process, including establishing key election security arrangements. He says he tasked the Prime Minister to lead the process of facilitating and convening all signatories of September 17, 2020 agreement and the recommendations of Baidoa Technical Committee of February 16, 2021 for its implementation. He added that government institutions will begin making necessary preparations for the enormous task ahead. According to September 17, 2020 agreement, indirect elections will be conducted where 101 delegates elect members of parliament in two locations in each state, with 30% of the parliamentary seats exclusively allocated for women. The opposition welcomed Saturday's move to return to September 2020 arrangements and demanded the president, whose term in office expired in February, completely stay away from the process except as presidential candidate. Senator Elias Ali Hassan is from the Himilo Karen opposition political party. He hopes that transparent polls will be also conducted on time.
I welcome the fact that President Farmajo has realized that there is no way out and he is back on the track with 17 September agreement. As he has handed over today the administration of the election and its security to the Prime Minister Roble, I hope that he will now lead the election and takes the full responsibility.
The leadership of the federal and regional governments are expected to convene in coming weeks to discuss the final process of conducting already delayed presidential and parliamentary elections in the Horn of African nation. The U.S. welcomed the action taken by Somali leaders towards resolving the electoral stalemate while urging them to conduct the election process as soon as possible. Mohamed Kahi for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 3rd. Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera has announced the reforms to create better conditions and rights for Malawian workers. Speaking Saturday in Blantyre on International Workers' Day, Chakwera said a decent work environment and workers' rights are compromised in Malawi. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
President Chakwera started the event by leading a solidarity walk within the State House premises with various representatives of workers' unions in Malawi. In his speech, Chakwera said he is aware of labor-related challenges which have come about because of the impact of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus.
The fact is that the pandemic has been hard for all workers, costly for most workers, life-threatening for many, devastating and fatal for some. And we must tailor our assistance to workers regarding these things without creating a false equivalence between the various scenarios. It makes sense to treat those workers as a priority for personal and social protection.
Chakwera, who came into power in June following a rerun vote, announced reforms his administration will make to safeguard good working conditions for Malawian workers.
In the new Malawi we are building, no workers should be paid below the new minimum wage we have put in effect since I took office. In the new Malawi we are building, tenancy labor, forced labor, and child labor will all be abolished. In the new Malawi we are building, no foreign person who employs Malawians and mistreats them will continue to have the privilege of living here.
Luther Mambala is the president of the Malawi Congress of Trade Union. He says the government should also address salary gaps between the expatriate workers and local employees.
If you have got the same qualification or even higher qualification than somebody who is coming from foreign countries, he will actually be getting more salary than you because you are a Malawian. He said it's not a sin to be a Malawian. So a Malawian should be treated equally to that particular person. And not all expatriates have got the expertise that the Malawians don't have.
He also asked government should consider enacting legislation that would protect workers who are laid off because of situations like COVID-19. Employees from various industries within the private sector also shared difficulties they encounter in the workplace. Gladys Gondwe works for a manufacturing company in Blantyre.
Our workers like me from the private sector, we are exploited. They will give you work that they know that you can't finish at the specific time. So you do the work and you add in some hours, but they'll say we don't have that overtime policy. To me, that's exploiting workers.
Another concern, Gondwe says, is lack of medical insurance for most workers in the private sector.
It's pathetic that workers, they will work hard, but then at the end of the day, they will find it difficult to get medical help. So if government could make it mandatory for all the private sectors to offer medical insurance to their workers.
Chakwera said the government is working on new labor laws that will address concerns raised by workers. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Africa is the most dangerous place globally for journalists to execute their duties, according to this year's World Freedom Index. The report says 33 journalists have been killed in Africa in the last 4 years while on duty. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, the East Africa region has been a hostile environment for journalists recently.
According to the report by Reporters Without Borders, the year 2020 was the most dangerous year for African journalists, as some were killed on assignment while others were killed in custody. Others were harassed while working, arrested or affected by COVID-19. In East Africa, journalists in Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania have found it rough either from the government, police officers or members of the public who have made their work difficult. On Saturday, May 1st, a Dutch-well German citizen journalist based in East Africa, Marielle Müller, was attacked and seriously injured by police officers while covering demonstrations in Nairobi, Kenya.
So what happened was that my colleague John and I, we were covering the protest. It really looked like a targeted attack. They knew or they saw us doing the interview there. I'm definitely seeing the Kenyan police with different eyes now. From now on, But generally, I have to say I feel quite safe reporting from Kenya. Compared to other East African countries, it's still very safe.
The Press Freedom Day is celebrated to remind governments of the need to respect their commitment to press freedom. A Ugandan journalist, Teddy Nakalinga, working for Spark TV Uganda, was attacked last week by the police and her tools destroyed.
I was taking videos of this incident, but as I was doing this, there came a group of four soldiers dressed in military uniforms and started beating me terribly. I tried to ask them, "What wrong have I done to beat me like this?" And one of them replied, "We don't care. Who are you to ask?" They took my camera from me, broke it.
Maxence Melo is a Tanzanian journalist and human rights defender based in Dar es Salaam. Melo says the government of Tanzania has been against journalists and that he is optimistic the changes might be felt with the current regime.
I'm a victim of the past administration. We are optimistic that government spokesperson issued a statement just today saying that they want to support the journalists. At least there's this kind of willingness from the state.
This year's World Press Freedom Day theme is information as a public good. Head of Media Development and Strategy at the Media Council of Kenya, Victor Bwire, said that the press freedom in East Africa has really dropped and journalists are finding it difficult to execute their duties.
Press violations in the three countries, you see a huge increase in the number of journalists undergoing threats, harassment, number of media houses closed down, laws that had been put in place like the computer and cybercrime unit and the rest were all very constrictive.
According to the report by Reporters Without Borders, press freedom remains highly fragile in sub-Saharan Africa as journalists continue to lose their lives and the killers generally go unpunished. At least 102 journalists have been killed in the continent over the past 10 years. I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Angolan journalist Francisco Rasgado returns to court today, Monday, ironically on this World Press Freedom Day, for criminal defamation and insult complaint brought against him by Rui Falaciao, Secretary of Information for the Ruling People's Movement for Liberation of Angola, the MPLA. Falaciao alleges that Rasgado published articles in the Chela Press and on Facebook in July and August last year, accusing Falaciao's administration of corruption. He is demanding about $1.5 million in damages. Mario Paivai is a veteran Angolan journalist in the capital, Luanda.
Mr. Rasgado just called me yesterday evening confirming he is going to court. As you must be aware, on April 23, police officers arrested Rasgado, the founder and director of the private law owner, the newspaper Chela Press, at his home in the southern city of Benguela, for his alleged failure to appear in court in connection to a criminal defamation and insult complaint by Rui Falcão, the Secretary of Information for the Ruling People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA party. The officers alleged that Rasgado had failed to attend on April 22 court date, but Mr. Faria, lawyer of Mr. Rasgado, confirmed that his client was never notified of that hearing.
So, Mario, he is supposed to pay a certain amount of money, is that correct?
Yes, yes. He is accused of defamation of Mr. Rui Falcão, currently Secretary for Information of the Political Bureau of the Ruling Party, but at that moment, Governor of Benguela Provinces. So, Mr. Falcão is demanding damages of 1 billion kwanzas, more or less $1.5 million. So if convicted, Rasgado could also face fine and up to 6 months imprisonment.
Monday is supposed to be International Press Freedom Day. How would you describe press freedom in Angola?
Press freedom in Angola is worsening, I would say, in the last times. A number of media platforms has been intimidated or forced for closed, in principle by legal reasons, but according to the media organizations, by editorial statements. We also are aware that at state-owned media, there is an increase of censure, of blocking of independent and critic views. So the media organizations like the Angolan Journalist Trade Union, Sindicato of Journalists of Angola, and other organizations are criticizing this climate of the deterioration of press freedoms and freedom of expression in the country.
What are his chances that the judge will let him go, or will they find him guilty?
We really don't know, because this tense political situations. But I would say that first and foremost, they want to give a signal to intimidate journalists in the country, saying, be aware, you can face civil charges and a lot of things.
Mario, thank you very much.
Thank you, James, and keep in touch.
That was Mario Paivai, a veteran independent Angolan journalist. You are speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Poland, where South African national 100 meters champion Akane Simbine ran a stunning ankle leg to help Team South Africa clinch the gold medal in the men's 4x100 meters relay by the narrowest of margins at the World Relays in Poland on Sunday night. South Africa won in 38.71 seconds, 1/100th of a second quicker than Brazil, who were initially credited with second place in 38.72 seconds. The race in Silesia, Poland, was so close that the Brazilians were celebrating before the South Africans were announced as winners. The Brazilians' disappointment was compounded when they were then disqualified for running out of their lane. In an incident-filled race, another African country, Ghana, were also disqualified, and Italy were promoted to second place in a time of 39.21 seconds, with Japan third in 39.42 seconds. South Africa will be up against the likes of the United States, Jamaica, and Trinidad and Tobago, who all opted not to travel to Poland due to COVID-19 travel protocol. And now to volleyball news, where Kenyan women's national volleyball team, the Malkia Strikers, won't be making their much-hyped trip to Brazil after all. The government, through the Ministry of Health, said on Saturday they had cancelled the team's 4-to-5-day high-performance training camp in Sao Paulo, citing fear over the spike in COVID-19 infections in Brazil. The team could have been in Brazil for 6 weeks, training under four coaches, seconded from the International Volleyball Federation, and playing friendly international matches against local clubs. One of those FIVB coach is Lamdre Gribich.
Do you know what is the most important thing to win Olympic Games? It's not the skill, it's not the capacity, but desire. You know, everybody is watching Africa like, they cannot do it or something like that. So what we want is help these girls to make their nation and their country proud and see that it's possible. So all eyes, not only of Africa, but entire world, are watching these girls.
In basketball news, the draws for the much-anticipated Basketball African League, slated for May 16th to the 30th in Kigali, has been made. The two-week tournament will see 12 clubs from 12 different African countries rub shoulders in Kigali. Group A have U.S. Monastery of Tunisia, Rivers Hoopers of Nigeria, Patriots BBC of Rwanda, and GNBC of Madagascar. Group B will see the likes of Petro de Luanda of Angola, AS Sale of Morocco, AS Police of Mali, and FAP of Cameroon slogging it out, while Zamalek of Egypt, AS Douanes of Senegal, Ferroviario de Maputo of Mozambique, and GS Petroliers of Algeria are all in Group C. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, May 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely week.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.